Hi, everyone. It's Elaine with Impact ADHD on the Wednesday morning Eastern Parent Success System on December 3rd. And today we're going to be talking about managing triggers, which is in that critical response area of activating the brain, because the triggering is what's happening in our brain. So just before I sort of dive into it, was there any questions people had on the reading or anything you want to bring up before I dive in? Okay. So I'm going to sort of introduce this generally. We've talked about triggers in different ways. We've talked about managing the stress cycle. So this is not completely new information. So today I really want to make sure we get some time to have a conversation about this and how it's showing up for you, both for yourself and for your kids. But what I want to reiterate, as I said a minute ago, this is about something that's happening in the brain. So, you know, when we look at the four critical response areas, the first one is always activating the brain. Is what's happening, is the challenge we're facing something that's based in the brain, and do we have to address it from a brain placed, right? So, you know, if the kids are tired at the end of the day, do we need to re-engage their brain before they can do their homework? For somebody was just mentioning, you know, he's really impulsive before he gets medicine on board, so you have to deal with his behaviors differently when that child who's usually on medicine is not on medicine. So those are times when we really need to pay attention to the brain. When we're talking about managing the stress cycle or managing triggers, we have to remember that we're still talking about the brain. So what's a trigger? A trigger is when something triggers you, targets you, gets you angry or upset, and causes some sort of a reaction. Our kids are triggered and we're triggered, right? And it happens all the time in our days, throughout the day. And very often we're pretty good, as adults in particular, we've gotten pretty good at sort of pulling ourselves back from being triggered. But a trigger is something that in some way is a threat, right? Some of our triggers are easy to manage and we've learned, and some of our triggers mm-hmm. are sort of chronic pains for us in our lives. And the triggers that are the hardest for us to manage are the ones that our kids are going to push the most, right? Is that familiar to anybody?
Yes.
They not only know what those triggers are, but they're poised and ready to push that button at any given moment, right? As soon as you even show some hint of starting to go, they're right there, right? Then they're on top.
Yes, definitely.
Right?
Right.
So the trigger is actually happening in the brain, and it's that autonomic response that happens. You know, it's the classic proverbial tiger at the cave entrance, right? It is a physiological response that happens when we feel in some way threatened, scared, angry, whatever that emotion is for us. For some of us, we experience it as anger. For some of it, it's fear. But it's something that causes a physiological fight or flight response. As Diane taught me this years ago, basically what happens in our body is our brain, I call it the amygdala hijack. The primitive brain takes over, draws our attention to our feet, and all we can really think of is fight or flight, right? Or maybe freeze, which is part of flight for a lot of people. So we're no longer having access, when that happens, we no longer have access to the frontal lobe of our brain, to the part of our brain that thinks and reasons and anticipates and modulates emotion. We are stuck in a primitive brain that can only think, am I out of here or am I fighting? And so when that happens, what do we do? What happens in your family dynamic? Let's just talk about us, not our kids for a minute, but just us. What happens, just sort of bottom line it, when you get triggered? Anyone?
You fight back. If it's with yourself, you kind of start arguing or get upset.
Okay, so you might get upset. You might start fighting. How might that show up? What might you say?
Oh, well,
for me, if it's with my husband, then sometimes I'll, you know, be defensive, or I'll either, you know, shut down and just won't talk at all because I feel threatened.
Okay. So that flight is shut down, don't talk, walk away, disappear because you're scared. Or if you're defensive, you can either start getting aggressive or even maybe even go on the offensive, right, if you get angry enough.
Right.
Anybody else?
Yeah, me, Herb.
Hey, Herb. How's it going for you?
You know, I have a big problem there because, like, when there's little things that are just so hard to manage, like, you know, like yesterday I was trying to put one of my girls' seatbelts on, and the other girl was holding the seatbelt so that I couldn't put it on. And, you know, I was in a rush, so I was already, you know, triggered. And I just, you know, I just snatched her hands away and yanked them off the seatbelt and probably hurt her a little bit. And I just hate that I do that. And I apologize to her. But that's one of my biggest trigger problems, where there's little things that just
little
trigger
things.
Me, and it happens so quick, I don't know what to
but
do.
But here's what I want you to hear, what you said. You were already triggered.
Yeah.
By the time that happened, you were already in a triggered state because you were rushing. You were late. And that was your first trigger, right? So that trigger put you in that place of operating from your primitive brain. You're late, you're rushing, you're using urgency and adrenaline to get yourself moving. And so you don't have that reason capacity that you would have if you weren't triggered then to handle it when she holds the seatbelt out of the way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So actually the trigger to pay attention to there is the preventive one that you could address. Right?
Right.
If you weren't rushing, you'd be more likely to be able to handle the second trigger. But what you've hit is it's like it's a double. Once one button is pushed, then it's like a chain reaction, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other examples? Okay. So we all know what it feels like when our buttons are pushed, when we're triggered, when we're not thinking reasonably, right? We're irrational, and we really are irrational. So part of the process is to begin to identify those triggers so that you can – there are two pieces to it. One is to prevent them from happening in the first place. So that example Herb gave is perfect, right? We get into more trouble as parents when we're rushing than almost anything. And if we could just figure out how to manage the time, this is a big if, I know, but how to manage the time so we weren't rushing as much, we'd cut out probably half the battles we have with our kids. Because once we're rushing, we're triggered. And when we're triggered, what does that do to our kids?
Oh, it makes my son extremely nervous.
Okay. And is nervous a trigger?
Yeah, because he's like, we're always going somewhere. So he starts to complain that it's always happening,
right.
That we're always rushing somewhere. And it's not, and we aren't, but in his mind, we always are when that happens.
Right. So in that moment, when he gets anxious, he's actually in a triggered state. Right?
I've actually found that when I'm...
Go ahead.
And then when I'm in a rush and rushing the kids, they move slower.
Yes, they do.
And it just drives me more crazy. Oh, my gosh.
Right. So when we're triggered, they get triggered. Right? And so whereas for us our trigger may be to move faster, for them when they're triggered, they may go into freeze. Right? They may not start flying. They may start freezing or running the other way.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, sometimes they're going to start just because it's fun and entertaining. But sometimes if they're triggered, they may have a very opposite reaction or a different reaction. So then you're triggered, they're triggered, and nobody's functioning from their frontal lobe. Everybody's functioning from the primitive brain. And what's possible from there?
Nothing.
Pretty much.
We just start yelling.
Right. Right. It's pretty hard once you're in that triggered space to operate in any kind of a higher plane, to be the kind of positive parent you want to be, to set realistic expectations, any of it, because you're stuck. You're really in that place. It's almost like the light is on and you got to turn it off, or vice versa. So have we talked about the four steps of managing the stress cycle in this group?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
So, and next week we'll send you, there's a link to an article that has this information in it. But if you have paper with you, you may want to take notes. We have a system that we teach that's about how do you handle it when you're triggered. And there is a four-step process to escape the stress cycle. And it's not only something for you to do for yourself, but over time you can begin to actually teach this process to your kids. And it really, really works with them. I'm not sure you can do it for kids much younger than 7, but, you know, you probably could in their own way. But it can be really, really powerful to begin to give them the tool to get out of the stress cycle, to get out of this triggered state. Okay? Step one is the most important one, and that's to recognize you're triggered in the first place. It's the hardest one to do. Because like Herb was saying, when he was rushed in to get in the car and get him, he didn't even recognize that he was already triggered by the rushing. And so when something else happened, he snapped, whereas if he had stopped in that first triggered state, he would have been able to escape that first. And that may not be the best example, but and I don't want to harp on it, Herb. I'm not trying to beat you up today. I promise.
No worries.
But the first step is to recognize that you're triggered in the first place. So other examples we've heard today. Somebody was saying, Chiquita, you were talking about your husband, right?
Right.
So what's an example of when you might recognize that you're in a triggered place?
I think if there's, you know, something that I'm extremely passionate about that I want to share and he doesn't feel the same way, or he gives me, you know, kind of a negative response to it, it upsets me.
Okay. And so, and what's, when you get upset, what do you notice? What happens for you?
Well, physically, I tend to, like, tense up and get into, like, a defensive state. And if I'm really passionate about it, I'll kind of go, you know, toe-to-toe with him about the fact that I have about it and the fact that he doesn't have about it, and how can he make an assumption about something that he doesn't know about. You know, so I kind of go into that mode if I'm in a position where I feel like I want to fight.
So here's what I hear. Physiologically, you feel your body tense up, right? Your
yes.
posture changes.
Yes.
And then either you retreat or you go into anger, right?
Yes.
And you go into offense, basically, toe-to-toe. Like that imagery is really powerful. So there's a physical response, and then there's a behavioral response. If you can catch it at the physical response, you can even stop that behavioral, right? But so beginning to recognize what are the physical symptoms that show up for me when I get triggered. So somebody else, how do you know when you get triggered? What happens in your body?
I got one.
Go for it.
I feel like it's, you know, I get this tight feeling where it's just, you know, and no doubt it's blood pressure or heart rate or just, you know, kind of overwhelmed. But it's almost like somebody squeezing me or something. I don't know.
So like tight across your chest?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call it that. It's almost just like, you know, everything's tight.
Okay, so everything sort of tightens, tenses up.
Yeah.
Okay. Who else? Who starts to cry?
I'll do that sometimes. If it's really, really bad, then I will.
Okay.
I might sometimes if it's really bad, too.
Yeah. So what are the things that happen before? What's the feeling, the body experience before the tears? What happens before that? What do you notice? Just think, everybody, just take a minute to sort of think about experiences when you've been triggered. And right now we're talking about negative triggers. But there are positive triggers, too. The excitement is a positive trigger. But
I think a feeling could be, you know, right before the tears or before the explosion, like, oh, my gosh, I can't handle this. This is too much. I'm overwhelmed. I remember there was one day when I was, like, upset about something, and it was just one thing after another, like, I don't know, I had a jar of marinara sauce, and it happened to, like, at that time, roll off the table and, like, shatter all over the kitchen floor, making a nice mess, and that just brought the tears on.
Like,
crying over spilled milk here, you know, I was crying over spilled marinara sauce, but, like, it was, I was so agitated from something else that anything that was going to happen that was,
it wasn't,
you know, that was not good with.
Right.
No.
So one of the things, like, one of the things I do, like, what I notice is I start pulling on my hair. Like, do you ever, like, put your hands on your head?
Yeah.
Like, if I put my hand on my head and, I lower my head or I squeeze my forehead or,
I
my hands on my cheeks. I tend, my hands go to my head in some way. Does that resonate for anybody?
Totally, for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I want you to really do is, everybody write down one or two physical symptoms that you notice for yourself when you get triggered. Because that's the sign to recognize and identify that first step of awareness. So everybody just write it down for yourself. One or two physical symptoms. So, anything else somebody noticed that we haven't brought up yet?
This is Julia. I think I sigh, or like I let it out, like with my voice, like an exasperation.
Yep. Exactly. That's a great one. Yeah, I usually do that along with my hand pulling at my hair, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I start nagging, and my voice gets higher, and I start saying, "Come on, come on!" And I'm getting higher. My voice rises.
So your voice gets weak.
But I start saying, "Come on," a lot.
Okay, so you start saying something specific. That's a great one. People may have a particular language that you use, like "Come on, come on," or let's go," or, and then your voice starts to change.
Right.
Yep. Anybody else? Okay. All right, so step one to escape the stress cycle is to recognize that you're in it. And so these are some of the warning signs for you that you're getting stressed, that you have been triggered, right? And when we can begin to recognize the physical symptom along with the emotional symptom. So you've written down a physical symptom, and I think it helps to know what your emotional symptom tends to be. Do you tend to get sad or hurt or angry? Or, you know, what is that emotion that tends to go? And there'll be different ones, of course, but it helps to write that down. So that's step one. Step two is to reclaim the brain. So if we remember that as soon as you notice those physiological responses, that means you've been triggered and that your amygdala has taken over. It's like a toggle switch. So step two is to reclaim the brain from the amygdala, is to get back into your frontal lobe, to get back into your reasoning brain. And there are a lot of ways that you can do that. One of the classic ways, which I love, is that Diane taught me years ago, is apparently the primitive brain is very in touch with its, you know, its animal basis. And so water is one way to reclaim the brain, that if you drink water, you can almost convince your brain that you're at the watering hole and that all is safe. And it can't be tea or coffee or soda. It's got to be water. And Diane says a lot of her clients walk around with water bottles all the time. you know, with the sippy tops, because that's calming. Sipping, sucking, that sucking sensation from OT is a calming sensation. So actually drinking water is one way to begin to reclaim your brain. What are some other examples of how people, what you know that you can do when you think about it to reclaim your brain from being triggered?
I think sometimes you just have to walk away from the situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for some people, you just got to take a break and get out of the situation. Is that enough?
May
I think also it helps to take a deep breath or a few deep breaths and just, like, convince yourself almost, I can do this. I can get through this.
Okay. So self-talk is one piece of it.
But also changing your breathing, you know.
Yeah, deep breath is really important, and here's what I will offer. In a previous life, I used to be a yoga teacher. So when you take the deep breath, what's really important is the exhale. The exhale is actually more important than the inhale. And the calming comes from having an exhale that's longer than your inhale. So you can inhale just, you know, 2 seconds and exhale 4, and that will be more calming than taking a really deep, long breath and then letting it out quickly. So exhale is a critical piece, and more than one breath, right? Like really stay with it for a few breaths until you can feel the body return to a more sense of normal, till that tension that you feel begins to lighten up. Herb, what were you going to add? Sorry.
You know, I listened to one of the presentations from that woman that you have on the 9th coming in. I went to YouTube and looked her up, and she was talking about how if you leave the room, there's a risk of your child feeling like you're kind of abandoning them, and that's what I have to do sometimes because I get angry, and I don't want to be angry, so I get out of the room, but I wonder if there's a solution there. I mean, cause I have to walk out of the room sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would rather you walk out of the room than explode.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully this will begin to help you see the symptoms early enough, right, to prevent you from getting to a 10. And I think for you that's probably the biggest piece is to stop the process before you get to that point. Because my bet is it's not the first trigger that's getting you to that point. It's usually a cascade of triggers. Does that resonate?
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah. So if you can stop the process before then, that'll be a huge piece for you. And then learning to communicate it with them. You know, over time you'll learn to be able to say, this is not about you. I'm really triggered right now. I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. Can shift the whole dynamic from just walking.
That's kind of what I did the other day. Like I was just saying, you know, when I'm reading you, I'd like for you to pay attention. And she just said, no, Mommy and I do this. And she just screamed at the top of her lungs. And I said, I don't like you doing that. I don't like you yelling at me like that. And then I walked out of the room. But I understand what you're saying. It's I need to take a break. I'll be right back.
Yeah, and make it about you, not about her.
Right.
It's your experience, not hers. Right.
Yeah.
Anybody else? What else do you use to claim the brain?
Yeah, I'd like to say something. The biggest thing that I've learned is I have to sometimes give up what I'm trying to accomplish in that moment because I'm learning that it's not always, if I can, like if it's not an urgent matter, it might not be the right moment for him to be able to do something. And I'm learning to be flexible.
I love what you're saying. I want to stop you for a minute because it's sort of the next step.
Okay.
I want to stay with this. Literally, we're still in the place of reclaiming the brain. What do you do to reclaim the brain? So for you, it may be self-talk.
For me, actually, it is. I say something affirmative to myself. I mean, usually, lately, it's been like involving God because that kind of suits me. But lately that's been happening. And
before you get to the scenario, what I want you to focus on, and what I want everybody to focus on here is we're not even in the dynamic yet. We're still in your body. We're still in your brain. So step one was to recognize that your brain is triggered, and step two is to get your brain back out of being triggered. Okay? So really, really want you to get this piece, that before you begin to start figuring out, now how do I handle the dynamic that's in front of me, that you got to stay with that. So if for you, it's, I had a client I worked with for years her mantra was let go, let God.
That's
right?
What I've been, or right? I'll say I'm going to get through this. God will get me through this. This will,
right.
Yeah.
And so, but still taking that time to calm yourself down and get back to a reasonable brain before you move on, right? And that's the piece I want to really drive home. Any other examples of what people do to reclaim your brain or what you could do? What about physical?
Hey, Elaine?
Yeah, go ahead.
One thing that I try to do is, once I'm aware I'm in it, is try to be empathetic. Like, I actually try to think about, like, I feel sorry for her, or I think about what must it be like to be her, and that kind of calms me down.
And that's step three.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Right? Even before you get, because you're dealing with her, that's about her. And really, I want you to hear that step two is about you. Right?
Okay.
Step two is still happening in your brain. Now, it could be that what you're saying to yourself is, this is not about me, this is about her, and getting yourself back over to compassion for her, right? And that could be what gets you back to a primitive brain, out of the primitive brain and back to a rational brain. I'm a big believer in, as parents, we tend to make things about us, and that's when we are in trouble. If we realize it's not about me, it's about her, it can get us back to a calm place.
Okay.
But really, it's about reclaiming. It's about getting back to a brain that's thinking reasonably again, right? So, so water, exercise, taking a breath. Sometimes it's just time, just giving it a few minutes, right? To sort of slow down, calm down, taking a break. I had many a debate with my son sitting on the floor, where he's saying he wants to keep talking, and I'm saying, not yet, not ready yet. Just going to have to wait a minute. You know, that we will continue the conversation when we're calm enough to continue the conversation, but we tend to want to get into it when we're triggered, which is the worst time to get into it. And our kids really want to.
Yeah, because kind of what I'm feeling like is, my issue is I don't want to calm down. Like, I really want to get my point across or help them understand where you're coming from. So,
exactly.
What do you think about it?
Exactly. And that's why you've got to recognize you've got to reclaim your brain first. Because you, as long as you are staying in that triggered space, you're not operating from a rational brain. You're operating from a primitive brain.
Okay.
Right? That's huge. That's why, it's really, really, this piece is big. This is your brain. You don't have control over this. Doesn't matter how rational you are now, in that moment, you are not. Right? So that's step two. So everybody write down at least one thing that tends to be a good strategy for you to reclaim your brain. I had a therapist who told me once, walking up a hill, you can never stay down when you're walking up a hill. I think it's because you can't breathe, but that's a different story. Wall push-ups, taking a bath or a shower. Sometimes you can reclaim your brain in 30 seconds. Sometimes it takes 30 minutes. So write down what helps you reclaim your brain. Now we're going to move to step three, because I'm watching time and I want to make sure we get through all of it. Step three, this one's where a lot of you started to go. Step three is to make up a new story, right? So, and when you get triggered, you've got a story that you're telling yourself that's not really working for you. Maybe it's, we're going to be late, and then I'm going to be late for work, and my kid's going to be late for school. Or maybe it's, he's not listening to me, he never listens to me. maybe it's she isn't paying any attention. She's, you know, whatever the story is that you tell yourself that gets you triggered, right? We have a story that we tell ourselves that we don't tend to recognize we're even telling ourselves. But is this making sense to people?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
It's kind of like visualizing the response you want out of it.
Sort of. So step three is about making up a different story. Instead of, Herb, I'm just going to go back to your example because it's such a good one. Is that okay?
Nope. No problem.
Okay. So instead of the story that you've been telling yourself is, I got to get these kids buckled. We're late to school. I got to get out here. Right? We got to go.
Yeah.
What else is also true that might be easier for you to be with? Right? What's another story you could tell yourself that doesn't trigger that kind of stress? So let's use that as an example. What else is also true?
That we're going to make it, whether or not we make it on time and whether or not we get buckled in. I'm not sure I know how to respond.
Okay, so we might be a little late. That's also true. That's a different perspective.
Yeah, I try to tell myself that sometimes, and it works sometimes.
Or, right. Well, if you aren't triggered, then you can tell yourself that, right?
Yeah.
So, getting her buckled is way more important than whether we're on time or not. Right? That's also true. What else is also true in that? Anybody else have something else you might tell yourself in that dynamic? That makes it work more effectively for you.
One thing I could say is, just looking at the situation, like, is my son hungry? He cannot function when he's hungry. He refuses to eat when he's starving, but he cannot function. So if I look at it from his perspective, okay, that's what's going on here. You know, he needs some nutrition, and then he'll calm down. And it always works, and I have to even show him, look how much calmer you just got.
Well, you've heard me talk about code words, right?
Yeah.
Because we have a code word for that, and it's broccoli ice cream. That's like, you know, hunger, that's it, got to stop everything and get food. So that's a great example of something else might be also might be true is, well, they're nervous about going to school on the first day, or he's really hungry, or his meds haven't kicked in, or, you know, something else besides, I got to get these kids there, I'm running us late, right? Something else is also happening in that dynamic, that if you pay attention to that, it'll prevent you from being triggered. So that's what we mean by step three is make up a story that works for you. So if we used a completely different example, I remember having a conversation. My daughter was freaking out. She was about 14, and she was freaking out about some paper she had to write. She's dyslexic, and writing was hugely stressful for her. And, I mean, literally, I remember sitting on the bottom of the stairs with her, and she was hysterical. And we sat there, and first I got her to write. I said, do you see how stressed this is for you and how you can't really write the paper when you're like this, right? So I got her to recognize that she was stressed and sit there with me for a while and breathe to calm herself down. So we did that for quite a while. And then instead of telling herself, I'm never going to do it, which is the message that she was really getting herself, is I can never do this. I'll never learn to do this. We shifted the message to, I don't remember what it was, but it was something like, I'm going to do the best I can, right? And just that shift enabled her to move to step four, which was to take action based on the new story. So step four is to make a plan of action, take action based on the new scenario, the new perspective. So for her, if I'm going to do the best I can, then we were able to sit down and outline the paper, right? But she could not outline that paper when she was triggered and freaking out. There was no way, right? So she needed to reclaim the brain and then find a different way of looking at it where she could find some success with it, right? Because we tell ourselves things that aren't necessarily true, and then we operate as if they are true. So in the seat buckling scenario, instead of I've got to get him there, what else do you think would have helped you manage your daughter's reaction, Herb? Assuming that you had stopped to calm yourself down before that point. So assuming that you were, if you were not stressed out, right?
Yeah.
By rushing, how would that have changed how you responded to her, the trigger of her pushing your hand away?
I probably would have come up with something more positive, like, oh, you're holding a seatbelt, and I want to make sure you're all safe.
Yep.
And get this seatbelt on, so take your hand off, please.
Yep. Yep, so maybe the message you tell yourself is safety is most important, right?
Yeah.
And I have all the time in the world when it comes to safety.
Right.
Right. And when you, so let's just use that message. So if the message were, after you've reclaimed the brain, is, what's also true is, I have all the time in the world when it comes to safety. Then the action you could take would be the sweet dad saying, can you hold your hand away? Or I'll wait because this is really important. Or however you have that conversation, right?
Yeah.
The action you take is calmer and based on supporting and safety and care, instead of the stress and fear of being late.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so, absolutely. And they stay calmer too. So.
Exactly. So what I want everybody to do is to identify one area. So you've identified how you recognize when you get triggered and what you can do to reclaim your brain when you're triggered. So now I want everybody to just write down for yourself, what's the time you tend to get triggered the most? And what's the story you're telling yourself? What's a really common trigger for you, and what's the negative message that you're telling yourself that you want to reframe in a positive message when you want to make up a new story?
So this is Julia. So a trigger, I don't know if you mean a trigger for me or a trigger for her, but I get triggered, you know, when she gets triggered. So our biggest trigger right now is Leah's 8 years old. Her trigger is her 4-year-old brother. Like, she doesn't want to be around him. He bugs her, like, in the morning. He wakes up early. He comes in there when she's eating breakfast. She gets really upset that he is there, physically there. And so then I get irritated that she's vehemently angry that he's alive. I'm like, I don't know what to do, you know, other than say, here's the TV, go in another room. And then she gets mad that he's watching TV and she can't watch TV. It's this awful cycle. So I find myself, like, saying, is this how it's always going to be? Or how are we ever going to get through this school year if this is how it is every morning?
Great. So the message that you're telling yourself is, oh my God, is this going to last forever? Right?
Yes.
Is it always going to be
like yes.
So rewrite the script. What's another message you can tell yourself that's also true?
So
let me reframe that. The message you're telling yourself is, I'm afraid this is never going to change.
Okay.
Right.
And so I could say, or I could tell myself, you know, this is just a season.
Okay.
Or they're only little ones.
Okay, they're only little ones. This is just a season.
What or else? I can figure this out.
Okay, I can do this. I can figure this out. And I think you mentioned earlier sometimes having compassion for her, right?
Yes.
So she's, if you're triggered from her trigger, what's the compassion for her trigger?
The compassion. So it's first thing in the morning. She can't help it.
Yeah, poor kid.
Or her brain's not activated.
Right. Yeah, poor kid, right?
Yeah, she hasn't eaten yet.
Yeah, this is hard for her. She hasn't eaten. This is really hard for her to deal with.
Okay, that's good.
Right? that one good?
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
You know,
yeah, that's super helpful.
There were half a dozen you could choose.
Uh-huh.
So based on, so it sounds like the one you like the most is poor kid, she, this is hard for her.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so based on that, what action would you take? Could you take differently? What would be your next
step? I wouldn't, I don't think I would explode as much and just say, why can't you just be okay with the fact that he's here?
Yeah. So what would you say instead?
I'm not sure.
Anybody got a suggestion?
I mean, 'cause, yeah, he's not going away. He's your brother, you know, so...
So acknowledge and compassion. Acknowledgement and compassion. Always, if all upstairs fails, start with acknowledgement and compassion.
Okay.
It can be really hard to have a little brother in the morning watching TV when you're eating breakfast and have to go to school, isn't it?
Okay.
I bet that would make me annoyed too.
Okay.
Right? Just acknowledge her experience.
Okay, that's good.
It will begin to diffuse. At first, she'll look at you like you grew a third head, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it begins to diffuse it if you can acknowledge her experience instead of trying to convince her to feel differently.
Right, because that's clearly not working.
Right. Anybody else have one you want to share? Story you were telling yourself in a new story?
I'll share one. This is Cheryl.
Hey, Cheryl. And somebody, if you're moving around a lot, if you could mute yourself because there's a lot of ambient noise, somebody like working in a kitchen or something, that'd be great. Okay, go
now,
ahead, Cheryl.
Listening to the conversation, I realized that I have actually sort of changed the story. I used to get so upset about being late for church. And I'd be yelling at the kids, and I'd be just so uptight. And now I say, you know what? I don't care. We show up, and that's all that counts. We are there. You know, we're there consistently, and we're doing the best we can.
There you go.
I think that's the self-talk I've done instead. Oh, this is so terrible. You know, what's wrong with you kids? And you know, I'm doing such a bad job because I can't get you to church on time, and I just don't even care anymore.
Right.
We're doing the best we can.
We're doing the best we can, and we're going to get there.
Yes, and we still benefit. I mean, you know, it's still a good thing, so it's not the end of the world.
Great. Thank you. Anybody else? One more. Sheila or Gina, y'all still there?
Yes, this is Gina. I'm here. I'm just taking it all in. I don't know, I kind of feel bad because as you're talking about trying to realize when you get triggered, I know I get triggered a lot, and I think I get triggered most in the morning, but I remember having a conversation with my husband not too long ago that what makes me really sad is I think I feel anxious as soon as I get up because I know what the morning lies ahead. And I know that sounds really negative, but it almost feels like Groundhog Day to me every day.
So here what's happening. You are starting the day in a triggered state.
Yeah, absolutely, I am. Yeah.
Okay. So if you can take a couple of minutes to reclaim your brain and to tell yourself a story that's going to work for you in that morning, you will shift your mornings. But
okay.
Just take a couple of minutes to just, when you sit up, to sit by the side of the bed, breathe, do some yoga, take a shower. Really consciously reclaim your brain and decide what the story is that's going to work for you. So what do you think it might be? Instead of, here we go again, which is what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What else is also true?
You mean as far as positive things that go on?
Yeah, you're facing a morning every day. Right now you're facing it from a position of sort of bracing yourself, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what else is possible? What other perspective is possible for you?
Well, I mean, actually this morning when I woke up, I said something to myself like, you know, a little prayer and said, you know, I pray that this is going to be a, you know, a good productive day. And, you know, I can see it, I can see how it does help. But unfortunately, I mean, I'm still trying. I think this, what we're talking today is something, is the one area that I really need help with. And, you know, it could be just.
Most of us do.
Okay. I'm not a real morning person either. And so it's hard because, like, my boys, my oldest, he'll start making all sorts of noises. And I just, like, I let it go for a while. And I'm like, you've got to stop. Please be quiet, you know. But, yeah, I'll do that. And I will, I'll have my water waiting for me, too.
So I really want to challenge you to reclaim the brain before you face your family, to really take
okay.
the time to center yourself in the mornings. And whether that means waking up an extra 50, which I know would be terrible for me, but some people find it's really helpful.
yeah, I need to do that. I need to, get up earlier.
Whatever it is, to really center yourself, but then whether it's a prayer or a message, to get a clear story of what serves you, what's the message, the perspective you can bring to the mornings that will help you. So it could be, none of us like mornings. We're going to do the best we can today. Or it could be, it's a good thing mornings are only 30 minutes before they leave for school. Or, you know, like, whatever it is, it may be a big stretch to you to go to, wow, I'm so grateful that we have this day, right? That may be too far a leap from where you are. So find a piece of the story that you can hold on to and believe that's true for you, that's also true besides I hate mornings.
Okay.
Right? And really ground yourself in that idea, that perspective.
Okay, thank you. I will think about that. Think about a better story to tell myself.
Yep. And that's critical for everyone, is that what we tell ourselves, that perspective that we bring, really, really matters. You know, that Henry Ford line, if you believe you can or you can't, you're absolutely right. And that's the perspective that we bring to a triggered state. So if we can shift it from it won't work to it will work, from the negative to the positive, or at least to a neutral, we will actually get different outcomes. And I think when I learned to become a coach, this was the most dramatic aha for me in all of my coach training, was the understanding that literally our perspective on things, how we look at any given situation, actually changes what happens in that dynamic. So in terms of escaping the stress cycle, if we can remember that what we bring to it, two pieces. One is it's in the brain, so we got to reclaim the brain. That's steps one and two. And then how we think about it will influence the next steps we take from there, steps three and four. Creating a perspective or a story that works for us and taking action based on the new story. Everybody with me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So we're going to sort of close up today. We've done a lot of sort of this work, the final four questions throughout the the call today. But I do want you to take a minute to identify what specifically did you focus on today? What really captured your attention in this call? And what's your clarity or your takeaway? What's your aha? Write those down for yourself. And then what's a realistic action step for you to take? And how can you set yourself up for success? And let's just quickly go around and let everybody share either your aha, you know, your takeaway, or the commitment you want to make. Just bottom line it.
Hi, this is Chiquita. I'll go first. I think opposite to what I believe it was Gina saying, that it was mornings was kind of chaotic for her. I find for me it's evenings, like after school and after I pick him up and he's tired and I'm tired and, you know, the situation just exacerbates when I feel like not listening or, you know, not completing his homework or he didn't do what he was supposed to do. So the aha for me is, you know, first of all, I have to realize that, you know, that's just kind of how evenings are for us because both of us are tired. So I need to change my perspective from, you know, oh, here we go again to you know, I know he's tired. And so I understand this is difficult for him and express that to him and let him know that, you know, I'm going to support him and work through this. But, you know, here's what I need you to do for me, you know,
whatever it is. So acknowledgement and compassion for you is really what I'm hearing. You commit to acknowledge what his experience is and have some compassion. Show him your compassion for him.
Yes, and I haven't been doing that. I've been kind of, you know, why can't you sit still? We got to get this done. It's almost your bedtime. You know, we're going to be late to bed, and you're going to be tired in the morning. You know, that's kind of the approach I have been taking, which is not working. So I need to, you know, change my perspective and change what I communicate with him to help our evenings go smoother.
Great. Thanks. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Julia. Mine's the exact same thing.
Okay.
I mean, just for the morning routine with the little brother, it's the exact same thing, just acknowledging compassion.
Yep, yep, great. Anybody else?
This is Christina. Hi, I think for me the biggest thing is I'm noticing that I'm already triggered before I approach him. You know, like just check myself, how my mood is before I start tackling something with him and
it's step one, step two. It's making sure you're not triggered before you start engaging with him.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Great. Thanks. Who else?
This is Herb. I think, you know, that recognizing I'm triggered and also trying to constantly be thinking about how I can rewrite the story. Need to work on that.
Right. So creating the new stories as they come along. And yeah, I think also recognizing the trigger is huge.
Yeah.
Who else?
This is Tamar. So I think in terms of reframing the reaction, that it's really important just to see the full picture and to see what else might be contributing and what else is going on. And also when I catch myself, you know, starting to say or thinking at least, why can't you just take a step back and say, what, you know, really, what's going on here? And is it the child or is it me?
Yeah. Why can't you just is always about me, right? It's never about them.
Even though you think it's about them. Right,
exactly. Great. Anyone else?
I just want to say one more. I think really being aware, one of my stories is if other parents are watching me, I'm so embarrassed that I've been conditioned by whether they're going to think I'm being a very permissive parent. and that's always one that triggers something for me and
yeah. So that's a great point. There's a wonderful book that if you've never read it called The Anatomy of Peace, and you can find it in our resources section.
Okay.
And he talks about the different boxes that we put ourselves in, and one of them is the must be seen as box. And so what you're speaking to is must be seen as a good parent. Right?
Right.
And and it's hard not to let that interfere with our parenting.
Yeah.
But I think if you like to read, it's a fascinating book. It's interestingly presented. It's by the Arbinger Institute, and as I say, if you type in the Anatomy of Peace on my site, you should be able to find a link to it. And that's a great awareness for you to play with. The other thing I'll share with everybody is just so you guys know, this is really the stress cycle and managing the stress cycle is really Diane's expertise. So if any of you feel like you want some extra work on this, I encourage you to do some coaching with her around it because she's really gifted at it, and she's done a lot of work around it. And if it's a struggle area for you, you'll be amazed at what a few coaching sessions can do to help you really overcome some of the challenges that you're having. Because as Gina pointed out, you know, this is a huge issue for a lot of us, and we find it's what we deal with almost all of our clients more than almost anything in one form or another is our own triggers and our own stress cycle. So just know that if you want some more support, I can clearly work with you as well. We both do a lot of work around it, and stress management is really her expertise. So anybody else have a commitment you want to share before we close for today? Okay. Well, I want to acknowledge you all for taking the time and the energy to be here for yourselves and for your kids, and for what a great, great call today, how wonderful the contributions were, the conversation was. Thank you for your engagement in the process. We have one more call this year in 2 weeks before the holidays. And by this year, I mean calendar year, of course. And I think that is all. Have a great couple of weeks, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.